Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight. Welcome to Hospice Survivors and Victims. I am your host, Carly Walden. Tonight is a very informative show. We are going to have three guests joining us this evening to share their stories to help save lives. We will be talking about hospice, the invisible Holocaust that hospice has become today, the present day hospice. Not all, but many, there are many rogue hospices that are occurring today. We will be covering the topics of guardians, probate courts, and what you need to do to protect your loved ones and learn from these wonderful guests that we have on this evening, learn from what they went through. We will have later, in about probably 10 minutes, we're going to have Candace Schwager. She is an attorney. She is the president and CEO of Elder Advocates, and she is an attorney for special needs children. We also have Barbara Stone joining us this evening. Welcome, Barbara. Barbara?
Barbara Stone, are you there?
Barbara?
I'm Barbara Latham. Sorry.
Barbara Latham. I am so sorry. Forgive me.
Barbara Latham. She was another court victimized family person, so I didn't know. I thought she was here as well.
Please forget. I am so sorry. I am so sorry. That was a terrible mistake. Barbara Latham is joining us this evening, and also Sherry Johnston. And they're both going to be sharing their stories and what they had to go through regarding their mothers. And first, I wanted to start with your story, Barbara, and welcome to the show. I am so sorry, Miss Latham, I got your last name wrong. Please forgive me.
Oh, that's okay. There's so many victims and grieving families that you probably have several people with the same first name.
Oh, we do. Oh, yes, yes.
Unfortunately.
And that's, you know. Yeah, it is unfortunate, and it's sickening. That's why I call it the invisible Holocaust. Now, if you don't mind, start telling us how, you know, let our audience know how your mother was murdered in hospice.
Well, my brother filed for a guardianship on my mother, and he called her on the phone in March of 2017 and told her, I'm taking control of you, and I'm taking control of your money. And he said, there's going to be a man here in the morning to give you some papers. And he said, I know Barbara's there with you, so I'm going to tell the two of you, if you're not there, you're both going to be in a lot of trouble. And my mother was not incapacitated, as he accused her of being, and she knew what that meant. And she came home with me that night, and she stayed with me for 8 months. And while she stayed with me, they waged a campaign of terror against me. And anyone who cared for an elderly parent, under normal circumstances, it's quite stressful. But when you have people terrorizing you, in addition, they accomplish their goal, which was to wear me down.
And yes, ma'am. They do that.
I ended up letting the guardian take custody. I could no longer, it was destroying my entire family. And what she did, and I think
yes,
because my mother was murdered within 30 days of the guardian taking custody of her. Starts out, once she took custody, I was no longer allowed to know anything except what she told me, the guardian. It was mostly lies.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me that my mother had fallen, and
mm-hmm.
she was in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was in the hospital for a fall. I went to visit her once at the hospital. I could see that they had given her Haldol, because she had gotten Haldol one other time, and her face was red and puffy, and she couldn't get out of bed. That was not like
And
my
that
mother.
Is a very dangerous drug for the elderly. That is an antipsychotic. The black
label. Black box
on it.
Warning. Do not give
yes.
if over 65. Do not give if heart problems. My mother had a mild, stable congestive heart failure.
Right.
And,
which I'm sure
and
was
so,
manageable with. Through medication, because congestive heart failure is very manageable.
It absolutely. She had been quite stable for 7 months after she was diagnosed, had home health coming 5 times a week. She was in excellent
mm-hmm.
health, absolutely. And so,
see, that's what I recommend home health. Thank you. I'm so glad you did that. Okay.
Absolutely. But you have to be very careful nowadays, because they'll trick you into hospice home health. So
that's right.
So when they put her, they had her hospitalized. I didn't know till later, but they sent her to an assisted living facility between hospitalizations.
Uh-huh.
She was there for 3 days. I had given the guardian her congestive heart failure medications, and I really don't think that she was given the medications as she was supposed to. I mean, I don't think she was given, because she was admitted to the back into the hospital, not for a fall, but because she had symptoms of really congestive heart failure. But they didn't tell her.
Right, so she probably had
congestive
heart failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exacerbation.
They didn't tell them
that. So, how did it get to the point where we have the guardian that is getting your mother admitted into the hospital, right? Setting it up.
Right. Well,
because
actually,
unfortunately,
yeah,
nowadays you go into a hospital for a fall, and if you're a certain age, they're putting you in hospice. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, to
well,
kill you off. So
absolutely.
How
they,
did
they
that
created
happen?
The conditions. They created the conditions for death, so that she would be
yes.
eligible and meet criteria for hospice in about 3 weeks hospitalization. They did that
mm-hmm.
over 2 hospitalizations. And by the way, my brother who filed for guardianship was the one that signed my mother in and out of the hospital and in and out of hospice, and the guardian came later and signed behind him. She had my brother do everything for her, which is illegal for her to do that.
Okay.
But anyway, what the hospital did, they gave her dangerous medications were later given in hospice. So she was drugged. She developed bed sores. And you must
That's
have
terrible.
stage 2 bed sores to be eligible for hospice. if you're drugged, you will become confused, disoriented. And also, my mother got up periodically and demanded to leave the hospital. And they drugged her with the Haldol to prevent her from being a non-compliant patient. And I've been a psychiatric RN for many years, so I know quite a bit about that.
Yes.
And also in Texas, there's a law. You cannot give an elderly person Haldol, another reason, if they do not have, it's a new law, if they do not have a diagnosis of schizophrenia, they cannot be given Haldol. And schizophrenia is diagnosed at the latest in early adulthood. So she didn't just develop it at age 93. Anyway.
Right.
So she became disoriented, all that from the drugs they gave her. She couldn't get out of bed, so she developed bed sores. They also deprived her of food and fluids. The other thing morphine does is it makes it difficult. I mean, it creates all this. It makes it difficult to swallow, and so they did a swallow test, which really the speech pathologist wrote in the record that she really couldn't even adequately assess it because of the fatigue. Nonetheless, they documented that she had aspiration pneumonia, which is treatable. It's not a terminal diagnosis. And they gave her that at the end. They gave her that that diagnosis to get her into hospice. So she had the symptoms of dementia. She had the bed sores. She lost weight. She also on the morphine and drugs. You don't want to eat. I mean, you're miserable. You lose your appetite. So they got all ready to be accepted into hospice. And one thing, the doctors were treating her for, you know, her. They thought she had an infection, and some of the medicines can make your white blood cell count go up. And that was why they thought she had an infection. However, the white cells were dropping, so the doctors continued giving her antibiotics because they seemed to be working. And my brother told the hospital nurse who came to see her that the antibiotics were not working. The doctors documented that they stopped the antibiotics because my brother wanted her to go to hospice. And my brother that told the hospice assessment nurse that the antibiotics were stopped because they weren't working. So there was just, I mean, there were so many lies. I didn't tell you how we were banned from visiting both in the hospital and later in hospice. They told the both facilities, they lied about me, lied about my sister. They allowed us to visit once or twice. However, then we were permanently banned and threatened with being with trespassing charges, and of course that would be arrest as well.
This is outrageous. This makes my blood boil.
Absolutely. So my brother, and he was aided, by the way, by his daughter, my niece. And they, both his children, my niece and nephew, my brother, all three of them turned on me, gave me the silent treatment from the beginning of this guardianship process. It was so evil. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
It is.
Carly,
so this is one. Yes.
Carly, it's Candace who's joined. Yes, Candace is here.
And now at this time, we're going to welcome Candace Swagger to the show. Thank you, Candace, for joining us. Yeah,
you're welcome.
Oh,
thank you so much for having us.
Oh,
I was listening to... Uh-huh, sure. I was listening to Barbara.
I was going to say, Candace is a, my mother called her her guardian angel because my mother got to meet her. I had no, I found out my attorneys were stabbing me in the back. And there was, I could not find, there are no attorneys other than Candace and one other in the Houston area that I even know of that will fight the probate court. So it was by only by the grace of God that, that I ran into Candace and she accepted my case. So
thank God for that.
Amazing. It's just amazing. And
well, it
yes,
was really difficult because when I met Barbara, I really and truly believe that after losing Sherry's mother, did Sherry call? Is Sherry on the line?
Yes, she's
I guess
on.
Not
we
yet.
Haven't got to her story yet. We were going through Barbara's.
Okay. After I got, after I had suffered with Sherry through her mother's death, and it was excruciatingly painful because it they starved her mother to death over a year, and I mean it was equally painful to lose Muriel because I met Muriel and I held her hand and she was always really affectionate towards me, and I just felt like I was supposed to protect her. And on Christmas Eve, I had been up, I stayed up 3 days typing as fast as I could because I knew you can't just file anything in federal court. You get sanctioned and they won't grant it. And so I knew it had to be a certain quality, but I also knew I was fighting the clock. And I wrote the federal court and I said, I've got 24 to 48 hours before they kill this woman. Help me. And so I'm typing and Barbara's on my couch and all of a sudden, you know, the email comes through. We had just filed it, and it says that Muriel has died. And I just, oh, I just burst into tears. I felt like I failed her, and her, I felt like I failed Barbara and her mother and everybody. And I just, it was just devastating. This is the third mother that I've had to bury, you know, with my client. And I just felt like, when is this ever going to stop? I've never experienced anything like this in my entire career. You know, I've always worked with, like, the top lawyers in the state. I worked in district court. I did not work in the sewer like this. And I did not work in organized crime. And I find myself, and, you know, it's like the first time it happened, I was absolutely mortified. And then to happen again, and then a third time, and it just, it gets more painful each time, you know, because it's, you just,
you're seeing, you know, Candace as an attorney, you're seeing that these are not isolated incidents. Which one of the biggest myths that we are trying to open people up to see. These are, because people say, oh, that's an isolated incident. They're not. This is happening all across every day.
Okay, let me, I used to do toxic tort, you know, mass tort claims, and when you do mass tort, it's very cookie cutter. Like, for instance, every claim is kind of the same, held same way, you know, it's just a different person, and it gets to be monotonous almost, but the way it's handled. But I noticed when I started working in this area that a lot of these lawyers are toxic tort lawyers, and I thought, They're lawyers who have not a lot of brains. They just kind of cut cookies. And it doesn't take much brains to handle mass tort. And it's more of a claims management process. And so I saw their pattern. And believe it or not, Sherry and Barbara's cases, I said, what are the odds that I would represent two sisters fighting against a brother who is trying to killed her mother in hospice, who is represented by this guy, Jason Ostrom. You know, same lawyer, in the same scenario.
Right.
They ended up killing her on the same three drugs in hospice. And I said, my life is like Groundhog Day.
And what drugs
were
those? Please tell the
it
audience.
It was morphine, Haldol, and Valium.
Lorazepam. I'm sorry, it's Lorazepam, which is the brand name Ativan. and it's administered over 3 days in increasing dosages each day, so they can precisely pick out what day they want the victim to die. And they picked out Christmas Eve for my mother, and my brother did not visit that evening. So my mother died all alone.
I'm so sorry.
She had no one to even identify her body there with her.
Oh, that was so sick.
Now, this is a question that I have. To that medical examiner, that coroner, how could he get away with that, Candace, with no one identifying the body of Barbara's mom?
Well, you know, I called that medical examiner to ask him, did he assess the body for murder and homicide? And he told me that he doesn't evaluate for homicide. And I thought, that is the craziest thing I've ever heard of. And he said he only evaluates accidental deaths. Well, I don't know if Barbara explained to you that they used the alleged spine fracture, which didn't exist. It was like a 2016 injury that had resolved. But they said there was a new spine fracture, and they used that to start morphine. Morphine causes swelling problems. And then they stopped her congestive heart medications to fill her lungs up with fluid. So they're like, oh, she's dying, you know, her lungs are filling up. And when we got the records, we discovered, you know, all of this. We put it all together, and we could see that people weren't being told even that she had congestive heart failure, and that St. Luke's was running $86,000 with the diagnostic testing, so they were about to commit Medicare fraud. And then when I got the records, they reduced the bill by $70,000. But the medical examiner is Harris County, okay? And that's who's running this guardianship program, Harris County. So they've got a network of doctors who do their bidding. Mm-hmm. They've got private ambulances. They were running her to and there, you know, from basically this assisted living place where this one doctor that I deposed in another case already admitted to me that he just gets together with the lawyers and agrees people are incapacitated, that he doesn't do evaluations that he's supposed to.
Right.
And so they use
these.
I call him Dr. Frankenstein because his name is Chris Merkel. But when he helped polish off my other client's mother, when I got in Barbara's case, I saw her records and I go, oh my God, Chris Merkel is the psychiatrist they're using to treat your mother. And so I was like, he said under oath that it's okay to lie to people to get him to take dangerous drugs that could kill him. And
he did admit to that under oath.
He did. He's an idiot. But yeah, I got him to admit all kinds of things because they think there's no recourse. Yeah, they think you can't do anything.
Or they do think that.
But yeah,
that's the problem that we have is that families. You know, I've been dealing with this going on 4 years, and it is, I'm so thankful that, you know, you've been able to work on this because people are looking for justice. I mean, these are premeditated murders. They're just hypodermic needles, not a gun or something else.
I don't know if Barbara explained this to you. I mean, I scream the day this happened because I'm sitting in my living room and I'm reading the trust and it says Muriel must be dead for this trust case they just filed against Barbara to go forward. And I just screamed. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And I called her, and I said, this trust requires your mother be dead. And I said, oh, my God. I knew at that moment we were in trouble. You know?
Yeah, because the money was the motive. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. 5 days after they get custody of her, she suddenly has a blunt force trauma to the thoracic spine. I mean, when I first saw that, I thought, oh, my God. It said blunt force trauma. Right.
That was on her
5 days later. So I thought they pushed her downstairs. you know. And I mean, doesn't it go for some it sounds like murder?
Yes, it
that's
does.
That's what got us on to it. Is but that's
yeah,
what
it does.
Suspicious.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but with the lethal drug cocktails and that were giving given to her in hospice, that is murder.
It is, but they set this up.
She was allergic to Haldol. That was communicated to the guard, the temporary guardian. It never made it to the hospital records. I wanted to just say two things real quickly that I learned. I didn't know
Barbara,
before,
please.
So people can hope, maybe at least be aware. Whatever estate documents you do, and there's this, all these lawyers are suddenly becoming elder law certified. Well, this is why, but they do these, they make money preparing your, you know, power of attorney, advance directives, all that. Those things are not worth the paper they're written on once the court gets a hold of you. They do not take those into consideration at all. And I also learned that when you're doing advanced directives and you get to the part where it says if you have a terminal illness, no medical, no advanced life-saving techniques, I had no idea, and I don't think others do, that that includes food and water. That is advanced.
Right.
Medical treatment, and not only do you have that, you want them to have food and water in the advance directives, but you also have to specify even if they have to be hand fed, because if the elder cannot pick up the fork or spoon or food and eat it by themselves, they will use that to deny food and water. But so you have to specify that you want, that the person wants food and water, even if it has to be hand-fed or spoon-fed to them. I mean, that's how bad it's gone. Anyway,
yes,
sorry.
Right. Oh, no, that is a – thank you so much, Barbara, for bringing that up, because that is – we talk about that.
Carly, I wanted to read something to you. I want to read something to you. This is going to shock you. I have the transcript here from the federal case, and this is why the judge said start discovery and depositions immediately. They frustrated a lot of that, hid it, destroyed it, refused to go to depositions, but we got quite a bit. But basically, I'm going to read you. This is going to shock you, okay? I'm sitting in court.
Okay.
I cannot believe what I'm hearing. But it says...
Okay.
Basically, the court says, so nobody saw the body then. She goes, nobody saw the body. The court says, other than the funeral home, Ms. Golddigger says she was not embalmed. That's Jewish law. Because there was no viewing, she was not embalmed. The court says, who gets to see the body to identify the right person has been given to the funeral home and make sure it's put in the casket? The Golddigger says, I'm assuming it was the medical examiner. Hospital personnel? That's a good question. I don't know exactly. I'm assuming hospital personnel. She's identified with a band or other means of identification. The body went directly. It was Christmas Eve. They started calling me at midnight. I said, what are you doing with the body? They said, the medical examiner's on the way. So are you saying somebody from hospice would have identified her body to the medical examiner? That's a good question, Your Honor.
I don't think so.
Wait, she says, we don't know the answer to that question? That's a good question. I'll find out. We don't know if it was her that was put in the casket or not at this point. Lord have mercy. That's a real question I'm asking, Mrs. Judge. That is a very good question. We don't know that.
Yes.
It's not confirmed. Pardon me? Joseph, pardon me? I don't know. The judge says the only people that would have seen her would have been at hospice. And she says, I don't know if the son or granddaughter did. I'll find out. The judge says, that is literally a question. I'm curious. Golddigger says, it's a good question. If it happens again, I'll surely ask. Okay, can you believe she said that?
No.
We're sitting here wondering, is her mother's body in the casket at this point?
No.
You know,
I literally cannot
after the funeral?
How, no,
because,
I cannot
no,
believe
so
that. It's,
here's
it, I,
what
I'm
I believe.
Sick. It makes me incensed. It's disgusting.
And
Well, I'm going to examine the body because I don't think there's a body in there. I think she was cremated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was no.
Well, that does follow what a lot of hot. I'm telling you, you know, as y'all probably already know, they do cremate the body to get rid of the evidence.
That's right, because the liver can be seen.
Mm-hmm.
So
they,
that's
why
and on
I always say it's an autopsy.
Well, I asked for one, and I said, I want a second opinion before you put her to death. And I was writing off stuff. She wouldn't respond. Barbara had the right to the remains and the right to funeral. She was required to have a court order, notwithstanding the fact the whole guardianship wasn't even valid because she wasn't served. But she had to have any guardian has to have a court order to get in your way, and she got in her way anyway. You know,
guardianship ends at death, but not for my mother.
I mean, she would not allow Barbara. I said, Barbara is entitled to the remains, and you are a criminal. And I was like, get out of the way. And so we go to the funeral, and I remember Sherry was with us. And she goes, there's no body in that casket. She said, nobody slings a casket around like that. And I was just sitting thinking, no. And my husband said,
God.
The hole is only about 2.5 feet deep. They can't bury her like that. And I was thinking... and then in court, Gold Digger's going, you know, I told Donald if he's going to, you know, cremate her, I will have no part in this. And I thought, there's the end of the bus. You know what I mean?
They're
just
set up.
But when they discover that she's cremated, then she's going to go, I didn't do it. You know, he'd get it to save money. Or, you know what I mean?
Oh my God.
I just thought... There's the screw
over. The evil brother
gets
thrown under the bus before it's all over. They think they're going to get they get nothing.
Right.
And by the way, they lie, the court lawyers lie about everything, about me. They tell lies. I get no opportunity to defend myself. There's no evidence. They just, everything is lawyer hearsay. Taken for
the right,
and this temporary guardian told the federal judge that there was no viewing because in Judaism, it's not
Jewish
permitted.
Law.
Well, that,
yes,
that is
Jewish
a
law.
That is
okay,
a lie because I am Jewish and my father died
yeah,
in 1979, and I attended his viewing, and even my evil brother attended.
Right.
So
this is a complete cover up premeditated murder is what this was.
Right?
And let's call it for exactly what it is. And it's happening
absolutely
every day to families. What?
No, and these people, these lawyers were so offended because they said she called me a murderer on Facebook. And I was like, what did you fit? You know?
Yeah.
Right,
exactly.
Right,
exactly. That's because they are. They are. And they work in tandem. You know, the courts with the guardians, with the hospices, they get kickbacks. I mean, they really literally do.
And
it is all about money.
As well. Unbelievable. They have private ambulances.
They have a whole network to cover every phase. Yeah.
Isn't that just, you know, we are uncovering, I believe, one of the biggest hidden, that's what I call stealth, you know, stealth euthanasia, one of the most hidden stories in America is what we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so sad that people, you know, trust these doctors and trust them with their loved ones and then they kill them and you know, once they get a certain age or siblings are involved and there's an estate and they want the money, then they're using hospice to get their way, and also they're playing God, and that is the most horrifying thing I have ever heard. So I wanted to get to Sherry as well.
Sure.
And Because, you know, with Barbara, that thank you. You shared some very powerful information, which I'm going to put out on the advanced directive.
I'm going to tell you one more thing, and then I'm going to be quiet. But everyone has heard of post-traumatic stress disorder. It goes without saying that the family develops that disorder. But I don't think what people understand is that the attorney who's working for the ones that love that family member, the attorney can also develop. It's now called the legal abuse syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, the state bar gave me $3,000 for counseling for being abused by the lawyers unbelievable.
It really is unbelievable. But this is what we're facing. We have to have these conversations. People have to know. Because if not, their loved ones are going to die. And, you know, we have to get, this is what we're going to help save lives. That is what we're going to do. So we give Barbara's mom a voice and Sherry's mom a voice and every victim a voice. I wanted to Sherry, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm patiently waiting.
I know. You have been so good. I was like, thank you so much for being patient. I wanted to get to your story and, you know, for you to tell our audience how your mom was murdered by hospice.
Okay. Well, Carlene, right now, as you are aware, I'm in the process of a federal lawsuit against Harris County. So sharing some of my story, it's not going to really... it's kind of off limits right now, but I will say that my story is almost hand in hand with Barbara's and so many other people's story. And with hospice, there's some things that people don't know. Like in the state of Texas, you can have all your paperwork in order and have your advanced directive exactly what you want, but your doctor has the right to power and veto everything that you did to make it void, and they can administer a hospice without your consent.
And the next thing
I would like to tell Marty is thank you so much, Marty, for writing that letter to Jeff Sessions. And I copied that and put that on LinkedIn and shared it with my friends. I would like to have permission to be able to send that to my governor and take Mr. Sessions' name out and put my governor's name in and all my representatives' name in.
Marty is an amazing warrior. And we will definitely ask her about
May that. I speak about your case? I know you can't, but can I?
Sure, you may speak about it, but I'm right now. We went through the process of a guardianship, and I will say to people, the best thing that you can remember is that, especially in Harris County, your attorney, other than one or two attorneys, are not your friend. They will stab you in the back. So you have to protect yourself. You have to record your conversations. You have to video record your mother or your loved one. Take pictures of their behind. Put cameras where they would least expect it and record. Record court documents, record anything you can get your hands on, and the more noise that you make, the better off you're going to be. And I will say that we went through the process, and just like Candace said, we were just overwhelmed. We were devastated what we got into, but we went through the process of the guardianship, and Mother died, just like Barbara's mother did. And I went to the JBCC to try to get justice through the guardian. That didn't work. The JBCC just covered everybody's tracks. And then I found Susan Norman, and she agreed to help me file a federal lawsuit against Harris County. And Judge Rosenthal, on the 15th, gave us permission to go ahead and start our lawsuit. So this is a landmark opinion that Ms. Rosenthal has given, and hopefully this is the door that's going to open up and let everybody else get judges and guardianship.
Oh, I am so overjoyed to hear that. Really, you're going to have to, I'm going to have you back on, Sherry, on the show, so you can share more about that when you're able to, when time, you know, at, when the time is right.
Right now, I'm kind of in a situation where I can't say anything about my lawsuit other than the fact that
right, and I completely understand that. Yeah, you have to protect yourself. You know, you can't be liable. And certainly, we don't want to ever, ever
I can talk. I was Sherry's lawyer in the guardianship. Sure, I was Sherry's lawyer in the guardianship, and I helped draft the petition for the federal court. And because I knew every single last detail, I went through this thing with her, and it was like going through a national or like some sort of disaster, like a plane crash or. You know, like, it was, like, when you go through, like, something like that with a client, you just, it's like you've been through a disaster together, an absolute disaster. Mm-hmm. And so we were getting attacked in the probate court. They were running through the probate court screaming, accusing us of wiretapping. And, you know, I had a radio show at the time. So we were getting on the radio show. Because the cops, they were sending the police in there, the bailiffs, and they were rubbing their guns and staring me down and saying, clear the aisle in front of Ms. Schwager in case we have to move fast. And I'm thinking, I'm 5 foot tall. I'm like, why do they think they have to move fast? You know, I'm like, what am I doing? And then I realized my mouth, you know, I mean, they're afraid of what I'm going to say. So, but the most painful part about her case is that we had to walk. Didn't Sherry? I didn't see her mother till the end, but she had to endure this pain for an entire year while her mother's went up and down. She almost died and go up.
You're kind of going a little in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is that better?
I can hear you better now. Yeah.
Okay. So. Her weight would go up and down, and she would almost die. They'd get a brink of death, and then they would pull her back. And Sherry wrote this book for a year. It was so painful.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, you're messing up a little bit. Your reception is. It's going a little in and out.
Okay, let me fix
Candace.
It. Candace. Okay. All right.
Okay. I can hear you. Okay.
Sorry, but it was just, it was a very difficult year because, they were twisting the knife, and so they would not completely let her die. They'd almost let her die, and then they would, like, bring her back to life, or Sherry would, and then, you know, it's just, they were constantly injuring her. She lost so much weight, like 40 pounds. She looked like a body from the morgue. And it was very difficult. And we were
so very sorry.
I was threatened to get out of the case or else, you know, they tried to set me up to put me in prison and tried to, you know, fabricate evidence in a car wreck I was in. It was so scary. I felt like I was walking through a John Grisham book, you know.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you for, you know what, being an attorney that has integrity and morals and fighting these cases, because there's so few that will, Candace, that will take these on. I mean, I've spoken to thousands of people, and it's so difficult, we already know, to get these departments to do their job and enforce the laws that we have already in place. And, you know, for you to take this on, I just wanted to, you know, thank you really from the bottom of my heart because, you know, it's rare. It's a rarity. And retaliation is something we hear about all the time for people that stand up and do the right thing. And, but I just wanted to thank you for helping, you know, these three people. Was it a shock to you as an attorney to find out that they were actually murdering people, our loved ones, in hospice?
Oh, absolutely. I at the third case, I just broke down and just started crying. I was so devastated. I have never, I'm not bragging to say this, but I've always worked with top lawyers in the state, and I had never really lost a case before. And we either settled it or we won. It wasn't about losing, but it was about losing so tragically. And I just felt like there was all this carnage behind me, you know, crying out to God. And I was like, where were you? I was like, you know, there's just destruction everywhere. And I couldn't believe I just walked through that. And then I felt really, very, very confidently that I was not supposed to win, but I wasn't allowed to know that I was supposed to lose so that it could be taken to a higher court. And I just felt like it was like one of these things that had to happen, but I wasn't informed in advance. And I think I wasn't informed because had I known how painful that was going to be, I don't know if I would have volunteered for it. It was really, really difficult.
And no, it is very difficult. And a lot of people do. Naturally, this is not normal, people. This is not, you do experience post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a real thing. You know, this is not, the main focus here is to realize that hospice is not the Good Samaritan outfit that they used to be anymore. And we focus on exposing that because I've spoken with so many families and their victim, the victims of the family, It's heart wrenching. It is the worst thing. It's what made me stop going to school to be a doctor and to do this, become an elder advocate. And you know, I feel so strongly about this. And I think that once your eyes are opened to the ugly truth of this reality, like I call it the hidden realities of hospice, it is. You're just changed. It changes you. It does. It changes all of us.
But it doesn't, at least it hadn't happened quite yet. I haven't lost my belief and my faith in God and my faith in justice. I mean, it's waning, but I still believe, because see, every one of the cases that I've filed is now in federal court or the Supreme Court, every one of them. So I knew there was a second phase coming, and there was going to be accountability. And that's the only thing that probably brought me through this, is knowing that, something's going to happen. It's just tragic.
Right. So what advice can you give, after going through these cases and, helping these families? We talked about probate court and avoiding probate court at all costs. What advice can you give to people? You're an attorney. You've lived this day in, day out. What advice can we give our audience
there's probably no guaranteed method of avoiding something that's horrible because it's become a racket of organized crime. And these people are serious. I had a doctor who was found in the car with a throat slit, a mediator killed after our mediation. Seriously, it's a John Grisham book. But I just got so freaked out because I thought, I can't believe what my life has become, It's just become a bizarre
you know, organized crime everywhere. So
yeah.
I think that one of the things, I had a woman call me from Dallas the other day, and she was of the opinion that there was a woman in guardianship as a horrible lawyer who I had to work against that was going to take guardianship of her mother. And so my advice was, you know, basically, I said, my father's firm, it's the oldest firm in Texas, they're expensive, but none of those lawyers work in the probate court. So I think to start with, I would pick up, if you're going to do estate planning, go to a lawyer that doesn't have anything to do with the probate court and
okay.
or any of the lawyers practicing them. And pay top dollar to get your estate planning done.
Okay.
Do it in such a way that you avoid probate court, that there's no way that your estate can be dragged into probate court.
Right.
Also, I think I would probably have a list a mile long of successors. You know, if the first if you name guardians, it's the first successor and the second, third. I would say, like, as far as your, like, if you have a trust, the elderly used to live kind of frugal, and they would have a lot of money, but you wouldn't know it because they wouldn't tell people. And
right. Now I'm glad
people need to get back to that. Don't be telling people. My grandma used to say, don't be telling people your business, you know.
Right.
Don't wear your...
That's right. Don't tell them your... Don't tell these places. They want to know. One of the first things, like hospice ask or palliative care or whatever, is what your assets are, you know, because they want to take them. You know, and you know, I think that thank you for highlighting that, because... do not tell your business. How profound. Let's get back to the basics.
I don't think you should tell even your children. You know, people used to have like a will hearing when you died. Your attorney would go call your family, read the will. Your kids wouldn't know what they're getting. You know, as sad as it is.
Right.
You know, we've got people like these two brothers who killed their mother to get their estate, to take the money. And so I don't know, how do you know, I mean, God forbid, I can't imagine one of my children ever doing that. Because my eldest son has said, I will take a sniper rifle and take them out if they ever did that to you. And I was like, I mean, I feel the same way about my father. I would be put to death by lethal injection before I'd let that happen to him. But you really have to be careful with who you name in these documents. I think one of the most important things is make your decision and don't change it. Don't make a bunch of changes to your will. Make your will and keep it the same, and do not change it. Don't make one until you're certain of what you want in it. But I mean, like I said, I actually wouldn't have a will. If you're going to have a will, have a what's called a pour over will. What happens is immediately your death, it pours over into the trust, and so it doesn't ever touch probate. And then, but don't. I mean, if you have any doubt about your children, about their integrity, don't tell them. They don't need to know.
We also have brought up on this show a protected medical decisions document, which is a very strong medical power of attorney. It protects you from doctors. It protects you from family. You know, it's we can get that at patientsrightscouncil.org. For a $15 donation there. So I just wanted to highlight that. Because a lot of people are turning to this and not having the living wills and do not have a DNR. No DNR, no living will, because they will do nothing if you have a DNR. So, but you're so right, and you know we've talked about this before. It doesn't even it doesn't have to be family. Family can be, you know, some of the worst, you know, enemies you may have, and you need to. Unfortunately, that's just the reality. Get someone that you literally trust with your life, and you know, and make sure that they will protect your life and the sanctity of it. So there, that's a very good point.
We spoke about testing someone. You know, maybe it's the person that you were thinking about choosing, or you know, you definitely need to success, but testing someone, like financially putting them to a test and seeing what they do with money. You know, and so that you're
what a great idea that is. I mean, that truly will test their character, their integrity, and see how they do. If you give them, you know, like you said, let's just say $10,000, for example, and see what they do with it, then, yeah, I think that's an excellent idea. That's just any ideas that we can have to overcome this culture of death, I am all for. And
I honestly think you have to have somebody who shares your faith, you know, because if you know, like, I mean, I would easily put my life in either one of these ladies' hands because I know who they are in their heart. I know, you know, they believe in God and, you know, that they're, that was one of the things. When I married my husband, it was very important to me that he was real, you know, that his faith was genuine. And I really, because the reason I'm reading was he will be accountable to God, not just to me, but to God, about how he treats
right.
And it was
that's
the right
wonderful.
Choice. So
that's wonderful. Yeah. And, you know, you're doing the right thing in your professional life. You know, that reflects your personal life. You know, it does. That you are
Carly?
Are being an advocate. Yes, Marty.
You have a caller on, area code 618.
Okay.
You're live and on the air.
Hi, hello, welcome.
Yes, Carly, this is Dennis Andrew Ball. You invited me to the show tonight to listen, and I know you guys are going to be wrapping it up soon, so I thought I'd say hello. Hello, Candace. I know Candace from previous conversations, an excellent person.
Okay.
Truly appreciate her guest appearance, and I appreciate all of you ladies, Marty, all of you ladies, Carly, obviously
Thank
we have
you.
A crisis, you bet, and this is not going to go away until there's some really strong stuff go on here. My opinion, again, is that we have to change it from within. That means candidate citizens who understand, just like we're talking tonight, and who mentally, emotionally are committed to seeing this whole thing come down. I believe we're living in the age of the deep state. I don't know if you know what that term means, but it is a bureaucratic criminal enterprise that has been created for some time, actually. I believe since the assassination of President Kennedy, and the Federal Reserve System fueled this, starting at Jekyll Island. There's a book out called The Creature of Jekyll Island, and these banking families, these banking cartels. This is fueled by money and greed and very negative behavior, criminal behavior, actually.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So,
yes, it is. Thank you for that
real
input,
good,
Dennis.
Good people. You bet.
Yeah, no.
So,
well,
thanks for all you're doing to also fight against to protect our loved ones, protect our family. That's the point we're at. We're at a fork in the road. We have to do something. And
yes,
I think all these are great ideas.
That I also believe that we've got to get back to the point where we are taking care of our parents in our homes and protecting them, because there are vultures everywhere waiting, looking
absolutely
for
that is so true. And just being a caregiver myself, my mom is taking care of her mother and my dad, and it's in home, and you know, and it has been such a blessing, but it scares the hell out of me what I have heard and seen on the on what you're talking about, Candace, of all of these people that, that are so dangerous.
Right. You know, I have a client whose wife was kidnapped. He's there was a social worker at the hospital.
Okay, I don't mean to cut you guys off, but we are out of time. I wanted to thank very much Barbara Latham. Thank you so much, Candace Swagger. She is an elder advocate and attorney. And thank you so much, Sherry Johnson, for being patient with us and hanging in here. And thank you for calling in, Dennis Andrew Ball. We always appreciate your input, of course, every time. Absolutely. And we just see great things happening with this show and being able to truly change history and make a difference.
Good. Yes.
And I appreciate you guys for coming on so much tonight. Thank you for your time.
We appreciate you too, Carly.
Oh, thank you so much.
I love what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely. I'll have to have you guys on again, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Bye. And with that, you guys, wherever you are,
have a good night.
Have a wonderful evening. All right, mm-hmm. We'll see you next Tuesday. All right.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.